This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? I hope you all had a great Christmas. Welcome to Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Tolt, sits down with other lead singers to talk about what it's like to be a front man of a band. Now, I hope you all got what you wanted for Christmas, but if you didn't, this episode really is a treat. Today, we have Pierre Bouvier of the band Simple Plan on the show, and I'd say he's the first true, real rock star we've had on the show. I mean, Simple Plan has sold 10 million records worldwide. They've headlined arenas, stadiums, festivals. They've had their songs on movie soundtracks. They've done crazy, crazy stuff. And I actually met Pierre quite a long time ago. In 2006, Simple Plan took us on kind of our first real European tour. So it was just the two of our bands, and we spent a lot of time together. And the guys in Simple Plan are some of my favorite people and some of the best guys you'll ever meet. This summer on the Warped Tour, we were on the Warped Tour together, and I ran into Pierre and said, "Hey, would you want to be on my podcast?" And he was totally, totally down. Now, a lot of people won't know this, even big Simple Plan fans. Back in high school, Pierre and Chuck, who's the drummer for Simple Plan, they played in a punk rock band called Reset. And they were one of my favorite bands of all time. And when you think of Simple Plan, you definitely don't think fast, aggressive, heavy, and certainly not political, but Reset was all of those things. So we do talk about Reset a fair amount in this podcast. We do talk a lot about how, you know, Pierre and Chuck had a huge falling out, and then they somehow ended up in Simple Plan together, basically taking over the world of pop punk. I find the story so fascinating, and Pierre really, for a big name rock star like he is, he really doesn't hold anything back. And he's very, very honest and very, very candid again. And this interview really couldn't have went any better. So before we jump into it all, I really want to say thank you to everybody who has been using this Amazon.com link. If you haven't checked it out, well, basically, if you're going to buy anything on Amazon, go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. All that does, it redirects you straight to the Amazon website. You can log in, and then whatever you buy, Lead Singer Syndrome, the show, we get 4%. And people are doing it. We actually got a little bit of money. Not a lot, but a little bit, and every little bit helps. So please, if you're going to be on Amazon, please check that out. Also, again, our social media looking a little thin. I think we can do better. So if you're listening to this and you haven't gone on your Twitter or your Instagram or your Facebook and added Lead Singer Syndrome, please do so. Please check it out. Also, you know me. I love the hate. We got the hate line open, 657-666-HATE. Give me a call. Leave a message. Whatever you want to say. Maybe you don't like Simple Plan. Maybe you don't like pop punk. I don't know. Whatever. Leave me a message. I'd love to hear from you. All right. Here we go. Episode 7 of Lead Singer Syndrome and my conversation with Pierre Bouvier of Simple Plan.
I'd do anything just to hold you in my arms, to try to make you laugh. Somehow I can't put you in the past. I'd do anything just to fall asleep with you.
Welcome to Lead Singer Syndrome.
Thank you.
It is so nice to have you.
Thank you.
This is my friend Pierre Bouvier from the band Simple Plan.
What up, what up, World Wide Web?
What are we doing right now? We're on the back lounge of the bus.
Yeah, we're on Warped Tour 2015, Detroit, Michigan, in the back lounge of my bus, which looks like a closet that has not been cleaned in a long time.
Yeah, the crew is a bit messy on this bus.
Yeah, well, you know, right now we have the whole band, obviously, full crew, and my wife on the bus, so all the bunks are taken. Therefore, there are no junk bunks, which means the back lounge becomes the junk bunk.
Does your wife have her own bunk?
Yeah, she does right now.
Oh, really?
She's stoked.
So she doesn't like you that much.
You know, when we first met, we slept always in the same bunk, and we had our dog with us, and she's sleeping in the bunk with us, and it was so much love, and 10, 11, 12 years later, We take separate bunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that we don't love each other, but, you know.
No, I mean, I get it.
You know, when you first fall in love with someone, you sleep with them, like, all tangled up. And then, you know, we have kids together. I like my sleep, you know. I love her, but.
Well, I'm sure some people listening to this have been on a bus and seen what a bunk looks like. Oh, some people haven't, but it is very tiny.
It's like 24 inches wide.
You're not a small dude. You're not a big, huge dude.
I'm a regular size.
And she's a tall lady, too.
Yeah, she's 5'9", 5'9 and a half.
Yeah, I fully get it. So you say you've been with her for...
We met 11 years ago, and we were engaged for like 7 years. We got married 2 years ago, but we've been living the married life way before that. Yeah. It's like we kind of like delayed them. I don't know why we didn't get married before, but we have two girls. We had our first daughter in 2011. We got married in 2013.
Lennon, that's her name, right? Lennon. You were telling me the other night about her.
Yeah, and then our second daughter, we got married when she was 8.5 months pregnant, and 2 weeks later she gave birth to our...
Yeah.
Or a month later, she gave birth to our second daughter.
Awesome.
And so we've been married for only 2 years, but we've been together for so long. We don't even remember how long it's been. Like today, she was like, "What's our anniversary again?" And I'm like, "I think it's May 27th." She's like, "Or is it 23rd?" So you know, we've been living together since 2006. So we've been together for a long time.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting you're kind of coming right out with this, because I'd say, you know, looking up a little bit of things about you, doing research for, you know, I do a little bit of research for these things. You're a very private person.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was a very private person, especially years ago, and I think it was about a year ago. I don't know what happened, but I have two daughters now, and like, you know, we've always been a solid couple. We've always been together, but I always felt like, I think when the band first started, we always felt like, hey, we don't have to talk about our relationships. We don't have to be like super open. But then I feel like from then till now, the generation that we're in and with Instagram and like reality TV, it's like everyone shows everything, you know? Like last year I was like, why am I not talking about this? I'm like, why? When people would like, when pictures would leak of like my daughters or a private picture of me and my wife, I'd be like, oh man, where'd they get this?
You know? Yes.
And then I was like, they're gonna find it. Like if a friend of mine posts a picture of my daughter on their Facebook, someone's gonna find it. And I was like, why do I care? Like why?
Sure.
Why does that bother me? You know? And then I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm full disclosure.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, you talk a little bit about how you didn't want to post stuff about this privately when you were a younger band. Was there ever any pressure from like label or management or something to, oh, Pierre Bouvier needs to look like this single guy, this eligible guy? Was that ever a conversation?
No.
I've heard that. I've never experienced it before.
I think that being a band that is so self-managed, I think that we sort of figured it was better to do that. Uh-huh. You know, the label never really questioned.
I just wonder how conscious of a thing that was.
I think when you're in a boy band, when you're in a band that's like been put together by a, you know, a corporation, they probably tell you that. But no, we never had that sort of pressure. I think we all just felt like, hey, we're in a band, like you don't have to have, you know.
Yes.
But now I feel like everyone is doing that. You look at like bands like Black Veil Brides or like you guys from All Time Low, they're always like with my girl hanging out, and I'm like, yep. Oh, that's cool. Like why am I not doing
cool
that?
I mean, I think you want to, you know, people are real people and they want, you know, and sometimes that makes them more relatable.
Yeah, and the fans,
and there's just nowhere to hide anymore.
No, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that back when we first started, and I would say even way more before we started, there was a lot more mystery surrounding bands, surrounding their private lives, which I think is kind of cool. Like if you look at like the real old rock stars, you know, like the Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, they never like posted or talked about their, you know, girlfriends or whatever. It was a mystery, you know. Even like when I was,
wasn't if you read their book 20 years later,
right? Exactly. But I think at the time there was a lot more mystery. Whereas as now, because everyone's got a camera on their pocket or in their purse, and everyone's just firing all the time, it's full disclosure, which I think is kind of cool, and I'm embracing it now, and I'm like, hey, you know what, people and the thing is that I think back in the day when stuff used to leak about Lachelle and I being together, I think there was like, oh my God, that girl, I hate her so much. But now it's like people want to hear it more. You know, I look at people with their girlfriends or guys in bands with their girlfriends or wives, and it's like, oh, such a cute couple. Like they're actually, it's like they're more involved in the band's life now. They're like, oh, I know your daughter's names. I know this, I know that. And it's cool, you know.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I know what you mean. Sometimes it is a little weird.
Yeah.
Even like I don't have any kids. I have three nephews. Mm-hmm. And even that, like, I'll post a picture of them, and then a fan will be like, "Oh, your nephew Liam is so cute." And it's like, it's kind of weird that you're saying his name.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but I mean, we both come from like that old school.
Yeah.
Where maybe now kids are just like, yeah, it's just.
And it's okay. I mean, the fans are, I mean, especially I think fans of our band and probably yours as well, they're for the most part, they're harmless. They're not looking to really. And even if they are sort of creepy and weird on the internet, sometimes it's generally just on the internet. Like, if someone says, like, "Oh my God, I hate her so much, I hope she dies," like, that's a horrible thing to say. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think they're thinking that. You know, they're probably just, that's hiding behind the keyboard.
There's the shock value of it.
Yes. I can say whatever I want, you know. So so it's all good, you know.
So 11 years, you've been, and now 2 years married and two children. So has it been, I mean, obviously what you do, being a singer of a band on the road, mm-hmm. I mean, you guys used to go real hard.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get a little more into like the hiatus and you guys being back in a bit, but I want to talk about how those bumps in the roads have been for you with, mm-hmm. you know, now with this relationship, with children. Like, how has that been? Has that been hard?
I think when I met my wife, she was, the band was like kind of coming towards its peak. She was very understanding of my life, and we actually dated like an open relationship for like a first year and a half, and she was really open and sort of understood what I was doing, you know, and she was very cool with it and kind of wasn't ever like the jealous type, and that really helped me, you know. I think she was always never showed me signs of like, "Yo, what's going on? Like, I saw a picture of you like hugging a girl." It's like, it was like, "No, I understand you're meeting a fan that's crazy about you. She's hugging you. It's fine," you know.
But the open relationship thing is interesting. That's, I wasn't expecting that.
At the beginning, you know, because when we first met.
So it was like you were dating, but you weren't totally serious?
Yeah, because I was on the road like 99% of the time.
Right.
But
were you jealous? I mean, you must have been jealous of her too.
No,
because. I mean, it's hard. It's also this, we're going back 11 years. There was no Instagram.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
Twitter,
so it was.
So it was a lot more.
It was kind of like a period of us getting to know each other, you know, and then. And then after that, I was kind of like, okay, cool. This is serious, and I'm in love with this girl. Why am I not committing to this person? You know?
Right.
But I think it takes a really strong woman to be with a guy in a band because there is a lot of stuff going on.
It definitely
on
does.
The road, and you know, I think it's and plus I think for a guy in a band, you have to find a girl that really makes it worth it for you. You know, he's got to. I think that I found someone that makes me a better person and that understands me, and I think she's my support system, you know. So she makes my life easier as opposed to harder. You know, I've been with girls where they make your life a little more complicated, you know, and they add more drama to your life.
Yeah.
And that's not the case with this one, so.
That's great. And she's from San Diego, that's correct?
From Ojai, which is near Los Angeles. It's like.
Southern California.
Yeah, it's a very cool, very spiritual, very hippie town that's like just east of Ventura. It's like a small valley, and if anyone knows where that is, they would know it's like super, sort of like super hippie town. And when I met her, she was going to college.
So she was your ticket out of the icy winter too.
Yes.
So let's not forget about that.
Yeah. When we became serious, she was living in San Diego, going to school there. So I'd go visit her, and I was like, "Where should we buy a house?" Like, well, let's buy one in San Diego, you know, like why we're not gonna go back to Canada. I mean, Canada's nice, but I mean there's that.
So you're a U.S. citizen now?
No, I'm not. I'm still a Canadian citizen. I don't think I'm gonna give it up, or not give it up, but I don't know that I'm gonna become a U.S. citizen.
Yeah,
maybe I will. We'll see.
Good, holding strong.
Yeah,
holding strong.
You can always get both, right?
Yeah, I think that's a thing.
Yeah, you can
do
both.
You can, yeah.
Yeah, I think Canada doesn't actually. If you say, "Okay, I'm U.S. citizen now," they're like, "Okay, we still consider you Canadian."
They never let you go.
Exactly.
Whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, the obvious question I think a lot of people are going to be wondering is, like, where have you guys fucking been?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you take so long between records?
Yeah, the funny thing is that...
Like, have you been on the beaches of San Diego watching hockey?
No.
Is that what you've been doing?
The funny thing is that I feel like we never really stop, but from the fans' perspective and someone on the outside, they're like, "Whoa, you've been on a hiatus for so long," you know, or something. But really, we're just writing, you know, and we're, I mean, the fact that we're all, you know, in our mid-30s now and we all have relationships, we all have stuff going on, then we all live in different cities. Chuck now lives in Los Angeles part-time and I live in San Diego.
Right.
And him and I have always been the writers of the band. And we get together and write, but I don't want to, you know. Well, first of all, we take a long time to write. We really I think it takes some magic has to happen to create a magical song. And I think because our career has been really good and we've had a lot of success, we're financially able to just take our time.
Okay.
You know, and not be like, oh crap, I gotta go back on the road because I gotta pay my rent. You know, we've got right. enough cushion to be like, hey,
because of some like publishing opportunities and stuff like that. And
just because,
and
just, I mean, we've done well and enough
just
where
your back catalog continues to sell.
And, yeah. And because yeah. I mean, I, you know, we became big when records used to sell.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've got probably close to 10 million records under our belt and, mm-hmm. you know, that's allowed us to have a nice cushion to rely on when you need it. So we want to take our time to make our records because we want them to be great.
So and there was never a time in this last period of time when you're like, you're having kids and you're in your mid-30s that you're like, you know what, maybe we're going to let Simple Plan go. That was never a thought in your mind?
No, and then, you know, I think when we come back from our touring cycle usually lasts about 2 years because a record comes out, like this one's going to come out probably in October or something like that, and then the touring will slowly start, the record mm-hmm. will get out there, we'll do some promo. By the time the new year arrives, we'll start doing some real tours. So then we'll tour South America, we'll tour US, we'll tour Canada, we'll tour Australia, we'll tour Europe, yeah, sure. we'll tour Southeast Asia.
Sure.
And that will be the first run to get the word out there. Then hopefully the second and third single will do huge, and then we'll do it all over again. And then we'll do the summer festival. So by the time our cycle is done, we're looking at 2 years. And right. when we're done with 2 years, it's like, okay, I need to take a little break.
So, yep.
So we go home, we do like maybe three months of like no band, no nothing. And then we're like, okay, let's get writing again. And cool. and that process to get back started again is always a rusty one because usually we haven't written a song in like 2.5 years. So yeah. we're like, okay, let me update my Pro Tools kit and make sure my microphone works. And like, you know, we got to do some demos and stuff. And then we start writing, and usually the songs are kind of crap and just
okay.
takes a minute.
So
to,
you're a band that goes through a lot of songs.
Oh yeah. Our last record, we recorded about 75 songs.
Mike, 75 songs.
Yeah. Well, demos, right? Demos.
That's a lot of songs. Yeah. yeah. And are you talking like 75 completely polished?
I would say 40.
Lyrics, everything.
I would say 45 completely done and another 35 verse, chorus, no bridge.
Yeah.
Like, full on lyrics.
You got to the point and you were like, it's probably not that great.
No. And you know, and starting on the last album, we started doing a lot of co-writing just because Chuck and I have been writing music together for over 20 years. We started our first band together when we were 14.
Yep.
And that was 22 years ago. So we're like an old married couple. And sometimes old married couples have trouble communicating. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because we're like, there's so much baggage that if I say an idea and he doesn't like it, or if he has an idea and I'm like, there's so much pent up stuff that's been happening that's like, a lot of times it'll just jam us and we're like, we'll just sit there for 2 days and be like, oh, well, we got nothing. Cool. Awesome.
He doesn't bring up the song Friend by Reset, does
no,
he?
No, exactly. that was a good song.
It was a good song.
Yeah, that was a song written. I feel bad when that ever comes back. But it was a real song,
well,
you know?
I want to dive a little bit back into your past. You know, you said you've known Chuck since you were, what, like little kids?
Yeah. So it's been 22 years.
You took those sticks, you put them in his hands.
Yeah. That was a little bit rude.
You know what? Hey, man.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, you
now,
know how it is,
okay?
Right?
You
know,
you guys have had a very great friendship and career since then.
Yeah.
I understand. But what I want to bring up is like, you know, I was a huge Reset fan
mm-hmm.
growing up.
Mm-hmm.
One of my all-time favorite bands, even to this day.
Nice.
And every time I sort of mention it to you, you know, I think I see you like shake your head maybe a little bit.
Well,
but I mean, you were a little kid. Like, you started the band when you were what, 13, 14, something
yeah,
like
about
that?
We were in grade 8, whatever that would be.
Yep.
So that's about 13.
Yep.
Yeah.
And can you tell me what happened? Like how you got started? Because your band was pretty very good.
Yeah.
And quite successful. To the point where you guys did several U.S. tours?
Yeah, we did okay. We did well, the way it started, we were in high school, and I had a background of music in the sense that I'd played some piano when I was younger, and my dad has a guitar, my brother plays the guitar, and I just have, I guess, a little bit of a natural ability to play some music. And when I was younger, a friend of mine had rented a drum kit, so I'd learned to play the drums, and
mm-hmm.
I was in music class at school, and there was a drum kit there, and I'd play the drums there, and I knew a little bit how to play music. And then Chuck would always love music and wanted to be in music, but didn't really know how to play any music. It doesn't really have that natural ability to play anything.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be in a band, and so did I. And another friend of ours who was a bass player, was pretty good. And so we started a band together, and he didn't really know how to play drums. So I had learned a little bit. So I kind of like always was the one that helped him, like, oh, this is how you play this beat, or this is how you do this, or try this, or it'll help you if you remind yourself the kick drum's going between the two hi-hat hits. And like, I would just break it down for him, you know?
The basic things, yep.
Yeah. So so that's how we kind of started. We started a band, and we were three of us. There was no singer. It was just one guitar player, a bass player, and a drummer, and we just played four chords over and over again. And we played our high school talent show, which was awful. But we never really started doing covers. It was the weirdest thing. When I look back now, it was really weird because I didn't really know how to play guitar very well. He didn't really know how to play drums very well. My bass player was decent at metal. And we just started like doing chords. Like, I'm going to do these three chords for like, you know, four progressions. And then we're going to switch to this one. And then there's going to be a bridge. We just started writing. And that was a band called Roach for a minute.
Roach, okay.
Yeah, and we did a record in my parents' basement. We basically wrote 12 songs, and I guess we were really creative back then. We wrote, the songs are embarrassing. It was like, there's a song called Pubic Mushrooms on the record.
Damn, nice.
There's a song called Cops Are All the Same. Coming from a 13-year-old, like, what the hell? It's just, you know, I was listening to Rage Against the Machine.
Sure,
and like,
I totally
and understand. It was like, just, you know, some
But,
weird
I mean, obviously,
stuff.
You went from this band Roach to Reset.
Yeah.
With some of the same people.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, I mean, you started writing some pretty damn good songs.
But by the time Reset had happened, we'd been writing music for like 2-3 years already. So we just wrote a bunch of songs, and we had another guitar player that came in that was super metal, like fast player. And then I became a singer because I was the least crappy at it.
Right.
I, you know, therefore became a singer.
I'll actually give you the exact same story. I was pretty much the only one of my friends that could carry a tune.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought I was a great singer, but I was the one that was not horrible. So, and then Reset began, and it was all about like super fast punk music and like skate type music. And very political, even though I don't really consider myself to be a very political person. But at the time, you're in high school, I had a lot of frustrations and rage, and I had to take them out on something.
But
and
you were the lyricist then, too?
Yeah, and Chuck actually was the guy that would always feed me the stories.
Oh, yeah.
Because Chuck is a very intellectual guy that likes to read the paper and likes to do all this stuff, and he was always into that kind of stuff. And I'd be like, so tell me about some stuff that's going on that's like, that's horrible out there, that like that are, you know, that sort of is something we need to defend people.
Right.
You know, and he'd tell me stories about, you know, whatever, tell me something that happened in the news, and I just talk about it.
So, okay, so you got this band, and it's good, and all of a sudden, you go out on the road, and how old are you? You're on tour, and you're...
The first real tour that we did, I was 17, and it was with 10-Foot Pole.
Crazy.
Yeah, 10-Foot Pole, a band called 22 Jacks, which...
I remember them.
Yeah, Joe Sibb is a singer, and it started off in Vancouver. So our first tour, I'm 17, Chuck is 17, bass player is 17, guitar player is 18, and we're going to start in Vancouver. So we buy a beat-up Winnebago, a 1982 piece of crap for like $8,000, and with my dad's money because he helped us out. Because I told him, like, when we get back, we're going to have some merch money, we'll pay you back.
Sure.
So he fronted us the money and bought this thing and drove it across the country at 17.
There you go.
Started in Vancouver. It was
that must have been nuts.
It was the most amazing experience ever. You know, we
three dumb kids, you know, like, have never seen anything.
Yeah.
French Canadians, just.
We had a friend of mine that came along to sell merch and drive the truck, and that was it. We just did it. It was awesome. It was the most amazing experience ever. And we came back from that, and I was like, this is it, man. This is what we're doing.
This is it.
And, I mean, we made no money. We made a little bit of money. We made enough to pay my dad back a little bit.
When you're 17, I mean, you don't care.
Yeah.
You know.
And, so that band kicked off and made a couple records. And on our second Canadian tour is when sort of the shit hit the fan, so to speak. But by the end of it, I think what happened is that Chuck is a very – He's a workaholic, and he's always felt like you need to do more, and you, like, he's very driven.
Yes.
And I think that I'm more maybe the creative side of it and like the more musically inclined side of it. And he's like the manager, and he just wants this so bad more than anyone else. And he has great ideas.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think I was too young to realize that he was an asset. And I think he was too young to realize that he was being a little too intense sometimes. You know, like he would just want to control so bad, and you just forget that sometimes he came across kind of a, like an asshole. And that those two immaturities coming together and clashing, and with my guitar player, we were like, you know what? Why are we like nobody likes this guy? Yeah, he pushes us, but like he's always pissed off. He's always, you know,
yep,
really mad. And so we said, fuck it, he's out of the band, you know? And that was kind of a big moment for all of us. I think it made him grow. And when he left the band and we had another drummer came in, the band sort of like kind of fizzled away
it
a little
did.
Bit.
Because, I remember that record coming out.
Yeah.
What was it called? No Limits, is that right?
Yeah.
Your second record?
Yeah.
I remember when it came out, I was a huge fan,
yeah,
and I didn't even know it had come out.
Yeah. Because
and I couldn't get it at the store, yeah, and I guess that probably was something to do with Chuck not being in the band, because the business side of things, you know, which a lot of lead singers are the business person in the band, and mm-hmm, they kind of control everything,
yeah,
and then a lot of them really want to take a back seat, and yeah, they don't want to deal with any of that shit.
Yeah, and that was sort of me, you know? So
yeah,
I feel like the band slowly started to fizzle away, the concepts weren't as clear, like the video shoots were just kind of meh. Like it wasn't like Chuck always had a vision and always right, had the desire to make it better and better and better and better. And you really need that.
You do. And you know? So the band fizzled out. You were kind of left. I mean, you left the band, and it was interesting. I had a couple quick stories that might be funny to you.
Yeah.
So I remember I saw you guys play at an Opera House, Toronto,
mm-hmm,
and I talked to you after the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly why, but we talked about the song Friend,
yeah,
that I brought up earlier about,
yeah,
kind of the diss track,
yeah,
about Chuck. And you actually said to me something like, yeah, yeah, like, you know, we're actually like talking again. We went out and had dinner.
Yeah.
Was that like kind of the beginning of Simple Plan right there at that point?
It absolutely was. Because
I'm a 16-year-old kid. And
yeah,
you're telling
no, no,
me this,
that's exactly,
you know,
what happened. What happened is that the band reset was slowly not doing big things. I was kind of losing interest. We had a drummer that was kind of crazy. Like, I mean, a nice guy. Adrian was a great drummer, and he was an older guy that really wanted the band to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like a slacker that was like, eh, eh, eh. And I think the band sort of started slowing down, and I was like, hey, what am I doing here? Like,
yep,
I'm working at a St. Hubert restaurant. I'm working for my dad.
Good gravy.
Yeah. Working for my dad. I'm driving a truck. I'm in this band. Like, I need to go back to school. Like, this is
right.
Like, this is, I'm working jobs to support my drummer who's living in a house that I pay the rent for and to support my band. But this band is kind of like slowly going nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
And at the same time, Chuck, after being kicked out of the band for about a year, was like, of course, the workaholic he is. He was like, I need to start another band. Like,
sure,
I want to do this again. So he started a band with friends of mine from high school, Jeff and Sebastian. And as I was slowly thinking about going back to school and just quitting music altogether, he was like putting this band together, looking for another singer, because he just wanted to put it in my face, like, screw you, man.
Yeah.
Kick me out. Look at this band. But he couldn't find anyone that he liked as a singer. You know, they had a few incarnations of,
yeah,
of other singers that they didn't like. So eventually I saw him at a Sugar Ray show in Montreal, and I hadn't seen him like...
Sugar Ray show.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hadn't seen him in like 2 years.
Yep.
And we spoke, and I was like, I was my best friend that I hadn't seen in so long, you know?
Yeah.
So he was like, hey, man, what's up? I'm like, hey, what's going on? Good to see you. And he was like, not pissed, and he was like, not angry. And I think at that point he'd done some therapy. Cause,
oh, wow.
Yeah, because I think when the band kicked him out, I think he sort of looked at it and going like, whoa, how did I get here? Like, why did I get kicked out of my band? You know,
mm-hmm,
and I think
sense.
He did some therapy, and I think he realized that, hey, I got to chill out a little bit. Like, I have to
right,
control my urge to be better and better and better and not push everyone away, you know?
Yeah.
So he was like, hey, I'm starting this band with the guys that, you know, Jeff and Sebastian. I'd love you to come check it out and see what you think. Cause he respected me as a musician, I guess. And I saw it and I was like, whoa, this is like fresh. And it was like way more, I think, accessible. And like, cause Reset was very, it never really had a place in the mainstream, I think, for Reset. It could have been,
mm-hmm,
but I think it was a very aggressive, political, fast, you know,
oh,
punk,
yeah,
punk, 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 punk. So for me to hear the type of music that was like, whoa, this still has that energy.
But this is weird to me, because you're saying you came in and they'd already had, like, started a band.
Yeah.
But I know Simple Plan as, like, kind of you're the creative force behind,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because... But,
so they had they already sort of, like, discussed it was going to be, like, a more pop-driven
yes,
pop
yeah, but
band?
There were... When I say they had songs, they had, like, progressions and like riffs, but not really full songs. I think they have one song with some lyrics in it that was not all that great. But just the idea of like, you know, Blink 182 was kind of coming out and they were blowing up big with like Enema of the State, or that was about to come out.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole more poppy side, like Sum 41, all that stuff was like about to explode. It was like that time, even like Phoenix TX back then.
I remember.
So that style of pop punk was like just starting to happen to me. So when I heard what they were playing, I was like, whoa, this is really cool. This is like sort of what we were doing back in the day, but way more accessible. And I like it. You know, like I've always liked pop music. My parents, my mom used to listen to Whitney Houston, and like my dad loved the Beatles and Fleetwood Mac, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I love that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, well, this is the funny thing. So as these bands are transitioning, I'm losing interest in Reset. Chuck is starting this band with these guys that is more fresh to me. And he's like, do you want to sing in this band? And I was like, ouch, that's going to be, I don't know, I'm still in Reset. Like, what am I going to, like, I, like, if I do this, the, we had a drummer that moved from Vancouver to come play in Reset in Montreal.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I do this, first of all, he's really going to hate me. My guitar player is going to hate me. Like, we kicked you out, now I'm joining you. I was like, you know what? Let me try it. So I saw a couple of rehearsals. I played with them. We wrote a couple songs. I was like, this is more appealing to me. And then in true Chuck fashion, after about a month and a half of me kind of playing with both, and there was still some gigs coming with Reset.
Oh, he made you choose.
Oh, yeah. He was like, well, listen, man, like, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to force you or anything, but, like, I think you kind of have to pick. We can't be doing both. You don't want to be in both bands, so what do you care about, you know?
Right. Sorry.
So at that point, I thought about it, and I was like, and I know that Chuck had been pursuing some labels, and, like, we, like, actually, I think the fact that he was so hungry got me excited again. Because he was like, we're going to chase some major record labels. I've got some interest already, which probably was a lie anyways. But like, he was like, got me excited on the fact that this could be a bigger level than what I'd ever seen before. So one day at a Reset show, I pulled the guys aside and I was like, guys, I know you guys heard that I'm playing with the other guys for fun, but I'm going to...
Not just for fun.
No, I'm like, I'm cutting off Reset. And there was a big show coming up. There was Snow Jam in Montreal. And I think...
That's where I saw David for the first
time. Yeah, it was on TV. And to the Simple Plan guys...
But the Toronto version, I think.
Right. But to the Simple Plan guys, to Chuck and Jeff and Sebastian, they kind of made it clear to me that if I really wanted to be in this band, I should not play that show, and that was the cutoff.
Wow.
But it wasn't like that vindictive, but it was kind of like, hey, like, if you go do a big show on TV with this band and we're doing this, like, which way are you going? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So at that point,
it makes sense from that perspective.
Yeah.
At
that point, I was like, okay, screw it. I'm done with this band and I'm switching over. So then,
interesting.
Yeah. So then I was like,
I want to talk about this time too, because my second thing I wanted to share with you, which is really interesting, was I went to see Reset at the New Jersey Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was, I don't know, maybe 1999, something like that. And I went to see them, and you weren't there.
And you didn't know?
And I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is back in the day. There was no fucking Twitter.
Of course, exactly.
No updates. I don't know.
No.
Like, I like the band. I go see him. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And tell the people who this fucking guy was. Because it's such a funny story to me.
Well, this is the funny thing. So they had to find another singer for Reset. In comes David. Phil had auditioned some people to take my place in Reset. And David was one of them. And he was super talented. Very young and fresh and like excited and just talented, you know, just great guy. So he joins the band and I leave that band and go do Simple Plan, which I'm the bass player / singer for about a year and a half. We write some songs, we go in the studio, we do some showcases for labels, we play in Toronto at the Horseshoe. We got interest from Atlantic Records, we got a whole bunch of cool stuff happening, but nothing ever, you know, gets us the deal. We never get the record deal.
The deal.
So after about a year and a half of working, we figure, because I used to be a stand-up singer for Reset. I didn't used to play originally.
Yeah. The four-piece with...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Chuck knew that because he was back. He was the drums back in the day. And I think he realized that, hey, that was way more exciting to watch when you used to do that. As soon as you start taking the bass, you're stationary. You can't be jumping around. You can't jump in the crowd. You can't, you know, be bouncing up on stage. So we figure, hey, maybe we should add a member to the band. Maybe that'll make us a more exciting band and maybe get us a record deal and yep. all that kind of fun stuff.
So you decided, or probably Chuck decided, to poach just to really destroy Reset.
Yeah.
Just really drive it
but
in
it really
by
was,
stealing
it,
their new lead singer. How are they ever going
to
recover from
that? To be honest, it wasn't the intention, but I think that in Montreal at the time, there wasn't like a sea of talented musicians that were incredible at singing and playing bass and doing all that stuff.
Right.
I mean, and plus it wasn't easy to reach those people. I mean, now you can buy a decent guitar setup for $150 at Target and start learning. You know, back then, like if you want to be a musician, you had to commit to it. You know, you had to,
it's true.
You know, so they were more rare. And when we saw David play at the Snow Jam, we watched him in person.
That must have been weird for you.
Yeah, that's it was weird because it's my songs, you know.
Yeah.
But I was okay with it. I didn't want to, like, you know.
You didn't never felt animosity or anything? I always felt like, for me as a fan of the band and a fan of, you know, a fan of you and then a fan of David, actually.
Yeah.
And then when this band came together, I was like, that is so strange.
Yeah,
you know?
It is strange. But I think the plan wasn't to necessarily destroy Reset, but I think that when we saw David, we're like, holy crap, this guy is really good. Like, he was a great bass player mm-hmm. and sang great. So to us, we saw like, okay, this guy could be the perfect missing link to this band, you know?
Right.
And I definitely have some regret in some senses that, like, for my friend, you know, Phil, the other band, I felt like it was a little bit harsh for him. And it was definitely a selfish move. But I think we just saw no other choice. We're like, that's what we need. We're like, this is the excitement that this band needs, you know? We're like... And at the same time, I think we were looking at that at Reset, and they hadn't really written any songs since I had left. He was just playing my old songs and playing my old songs, and the interest towards the band had sort of dipped because the original singer wasn't there anymore.
Sure.
I think we all felt like that's not going to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, that's not going to – like, you need to have a good songwriter, and I think that – it's going to sound really full of myself, but I think that what attracted people to Reset was the songs that – I had written that I written with Chuck and Phil. Right. And I think that when I left, the magic there was a little bit gone, you know? So we felt like we should take David and just bring him into our band. And like, this could be huge, you know, and this could really be the missing link to ours.
Yeah.
And it's a selfish move. And I still,
well,
you know what I mean?
Like, you were a young kid too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and there's obviously like everybody has regrets about their young musical career.
And I feel bad about it still to this day.
In hindsight, but look where you are now.
That's the thing, you know, it's like, so I feel bad about it, and I think it was what we had to do. And if you look at it today, like you're saying, it's like, obviously I think it was the right move, you know, for us.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's the story. And that's how this band became the five guys that are here today.
So you somehow went from being basically a non-singer, only the guy in the room that could carry a tune, to now being a standalone singer in like a multi-platinum selling like band.
Yeah.
How... Do you feel like a singer now? Do you feel like that? Or do you feel like a part of you is sort of pulling the wool over everyone's eyes and you're like, I'm just a guy writing songs. I'm a songwriter. Or I'm like a, you know, I'm a guitar player or drummer or bass player. I'm not really this front man. Do you ever feel like that? Or is it, has it changed now?
I feel like a fraud every single day. Like, no, it's true. I mean, I don't think I'm a singer. And people always, I think a lot of singers feel that way.
I do feel that way sometimes,
and I
too.
Think that, like, I'm like, oh, man, whew, like, got through that show. Woo, lucky guy. Like, I know I can sing. And I know that people like my voice. And I know that that it has some appeal to it. I know that, like, that I can create a song and it was going to be great. But I feel like singing for me is a struggle. You know, it's like it's, and I think that's what people like. Because when I sing, it's painful in a way. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, ooh, this is natural. The high notes come out naturally. I just fucking belt it out. Like, no, I have to fucking work at it.
Sure.
And when I'm singing anything above an A sharp, B, whatever, like, I am struggling to get there.
Yeah.
And that comes across in the music. And even my wife has told me, like, sometimes we'll get wasted and go home and I'll just sit in the piano and sing and my voice is shot.
Right.
Because I'm drunk.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I sound like, and she's like, you sound so amazing. And I'm like, how could you think that? Like, I can barely hit a note. And she's like, but that sounds so cool. And I think that's what it is about a lot of men singers, that people like to hear the suffering, you know? And I think when I sing, I'm suffering a little bit.
Right. That's a great point. But I have a thing about singers too, while we're talking about it, that a lot of the biggest bands of all time have singers that aren't that great.
Yeah.
I mean, other than like the obvious, like amazing guys like Freddie Mercury,
yeah.
you know, like, Robert Plant.
Yeah.
You know, like obviously there's those guys, but then you look at like Bono.
Yeah. Not a great singer.
Not a good singer.
No.
You know, but he has a very distinctive voice.
Yeah.
So I
look at Nirvana.
There you go.
I mean, would he have won American Idol? No.
No, he wouldn't.
No, you know, but that's
and
the thing.
And would you or would I? No way.
I wouldn't make it past the auditions, you know?
It's that's,
true.
But that's the interesting thing, though, about, like, who we are.
Yeah.
Because people look up at a band, especially something like Warped Tour,
mm-hmm.
where there's so much focus on the lead singer of the band, and they don't understand, Pierre was... He was there in the studio every fucking minute
mm-hmm.
with the producer every day working. Every note mm-hmm. was his note.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand that. So that's always an interesting thing when you're up there and you're singing the song. And I did an interview with Caleb from Beartooth.
Mm-hmm.
He not only sings the songs, he plays everything, produces everything, mm-hmm. literally hits record on his own studio.
Right.
You know? So obviously that's pretty much you as well from what I understand at this point.
Yeah. Well, I do all my demos now. I have never produced one of our records. I don't think I'd ever want to, just because I like having a referee there. I think it puts a lot of pressure on a band to all look at one of the band members to be the guy that decides something. Or like, I don't feel comfortable telling Jeff, I don't know, man, you should play that again. That wasn't really good. Be like, I don't want to start a fight.
Yes.
I'd rather have someone else be that person.
Sure.
But I record my own demos. I've recorded some stuff that sounds pretty good. I got a mini studio set up at home, but I love, and that's been a big asset for me is learning to record my own voice, because I know what sounds good. I know where to crack it. I know where mm-hmm. to push it. I know where to scale back, you know? And I think that hearing takes, comping my own vocals, like I can comp it on the go, you know? So
right.
It's cool.
So, but have you ever thought about doing any kind of solo project?
Yeah, I have.
It's been, what are you waiting for? I mean, it's been, you know, a long road,
know,
and I know that Seb is doing, has done some stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously maybe for him as, you know, the backup singer, guitar player, maybe he wants more of a, you know, he wants that outlet.
Yeah.
And maybe you already have that, but I also want to ask you if part of it is maybe because you're not as confident a singer, if that's something that's been... You've held back from.
I think there's a few reasons why that hasn't happened yet. I think that writing songs is kind of difficult, you know? And plus, the funny thing is that, as we were saying before, people think we're in this big hiatus. We're doing, you know, we're sitting around, chilling around, doing whatever. But we're really just writing a new record. So there's not a whole lot of time for me to be investing, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months into a solo project, you know?
Sure.
And I think that it's important for a band that has success to keep chasing it. You know, we're here. We've got fans that care about us. If I do a solo record, it's not going to be as powerful as a Simple Plan record is. I think in some ways, you know, maybe it would be. But I think that we have something good going on, and the fans want it.
Yeah.
Why am I going to dilute that and, like, kind of upset the other band members probably? Because if I do that, we all have... you know, houses and wives and kids. This is our career. We make money doing this. And as much as we love doing it, I don't have another job. Neither does anyone else in this band. I mean, guys have some projects here and there, but this is our bread and butter. So I feel a commitment to the band. And if I write something, since I'm the major writer of the band, it'll probably sound kind of like Simple Plan. So if I do that, like sometimes I hear stuff like, when Tom from Blink did Boxcar Racer. Some of the best Boxcar Racer songs could have easily been Blink 182 songs. Why were they not just Blink 182 songs? You know what I mean? Like, and I get why. The answer to that is very simple. I don't know. Like,
I know what you mean. So, like, if you took the best of those three Blink 182 bands and put it onto a Blink 182 record, they'd have some pretty good shit.
Yeah, you know?
I understand that. But at the same time, like, with what Simple Plan does... How do I say this without offending you?
No, I know what you
have.
I know,
a lot of the songs are very simple,
mm-hmm.
right?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the chord progressions are simple.
Yeah.
You're not going to do anything overly crazy because mm-hmm. you're generally sticking to like classic chord progressions for the most part, classic song structure.
Yep.
You know, does that ever get tiring for you? Do you ever like? Do you ever just want to like be like, fuck, I want a NoFX beat over this, and I just want to punk it out, or I want to like play like a fucking riff, like really like riff out, or do like something heavier?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that?
Yeah.
And maybe that's almost what I'm asking you with this question is like, is that like an outlet you need, or are you just like completely happy with trying to make the best Simple Plan song you can over and over again?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think every one of my records has a little bit of a curveball, you know, has some a little bit weirder stuff. And I think that honestly, when I like when I hear stuff like from your band or bands like a Pierce the Veil or whatever, stuff like this, listen to it, that's really cool, and I'm like, wow, that's so aggressive and so cool, and I'm like, I'm gonna try to write that, and I can't. Like I just don't do it as well as you guys do, and I'm like, why am I gonna do like a half ass version of what I think that sounds like? Just because, you know. But that being said, we do have some stuff on this upcoming record that is way different. But usually it's different.
Do you have a title for the record?
Not yet, actually. It was so bad. We really should have one. But we have some... I think we do a lot of stuff that's a little bit different. But the main reason is that I'm not always creative all the time. I don't go home and be like, okay, I just spent 3 months making this album. I want to go in my studio in the backyard and record some songs of my own.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's hard to write songs. It takes a while. I'm very perfectionist. I want it to be great. I don't just like grab a guitar and like sing something. I don't know what to say. Like I have to think about it, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times when I get back home after working on the record, I'm like, I want to go surf. You know, I want to go be with my kids. I've got two girls.
Sure.
I want to hang out with my friends. I want to have a barbecue at my house. I want to go play some golf.
Right.
And by the time I've done all the things I want to do, and I've like worked on my house, or like we're landscaping the house now and work on that.
Yeah.
By the time I'm done, it's like, whoa, time to get back in Simple Plan now because people are waiting, you know?
Right.
So
it
I think a lot of it is a time constraint.
But it's also great that you guys have had, I mean, you guys went away for 4 years since your last record, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't done much touring. And I just watched you play on the Warped Tour and wherever we are today, Detroit, and every kid was singing.
Yeah.
So you've done a great job of keeping your fans around and not alienating them by trying to change your sound.
And that's the thing. I've realized something on this last album especially, or even maybe the third record, we're always thinking, like, we can't keep doing the same thing. We have to, like, change it up. And, like, on the third album that came out in 2008 or 9 or something, 8, I think, we want to go more mature, and like the image of the band was a black and white picture, and we wanted to add some
the
beats.
Thumbs up, though, right?
Yeah,
you had to keep a little.
I was actually holding my jacket like this. That's funny.
I thought it was like a thumbs up, and I was like, okay, it's like a little dark imagery, but yeah, I gotta give a thumbs up. You gotta stay positive.
That's funny. But we tried to be a little different then, and even before we started recording this last album that's coming out in a couple months. I met up with Tim Pagnotta from Sugar Cult, who's a great producer, produced like Neon Trees, produced, what's the band called? Shut Up and Dance With Me.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, what is that band called? Great band. Great song.
Whatever, that song's great. That song. He's indie rock, like he's the number one indie rock guy right now. And he used to be in Sugar Cult, which is super pop punk. And we wrote a song with him, and he was like, guys, we could like take your sound and like just make it way more current and like indie pop rock, and we thought about it, and like he's like, do a riff, and like it's so much simpler than you think, and we're like, but then I was like, if we do the most awesome song that sounds like the Black Keys, for example, or whatever,
sure,
some more like cool hipster sounding thing, it's not gonna work for us. Not because we can't pull it off, but because that's not what people want to hear from us. And this is a revelation I've got from, we've all realized that we are who we are. The band is successful at what we do, and people like us for what we represent. And I think that's important to kind of follow that a little bit, because like I said, a band, someone listens to Arcade Fire and that loves Arcade Fire and those types of bands doesn't want to wear a Simple Plan t-shirt. They don't want to buy my record. So if I make the best Arcade Fire sounding record, it's going to be awful for me, because my fans won't really like it, and the fans of that style of music don't want to be Simple Plan fans. So what am I doing it for, you know?
Sure.
So I think
it makes sense.
So for us, I think we realized that, like, embrace who you are, and instead of trying to being someone else, be the best version of you, you know?
Right.
And that's been a big thing for us. And it's not about being throwback or like trying to not disrupt the fans. It's really about that's who we are, you know? Like, that's what I liked when I started. That's what I still like today. And do I like stuff that sounds like I said, your band or Pierce the Veil or even Black Veil Brides or August Burns Red or whatever? Do I like that stuff? Absolutely. But that's not who I am, you know? And that's okay.
So you've come to terms. You're proud of your legacy with Simple Plan, and you're proud moving forward of everything.
Totally. Yeah.
It's a great,
way to be. We always try to evolve, you know? And I can play you some new stuff that you'll hear. They'll be like, whoa, that's you guys?
Sure.
But I think that there's also a reality that we like for our band to be relevant. We like for our band to be heard. We like for our music to get out there. And what helps to do that is having a hit. If you have a hit on radio, the message gets across. People hear it. They listen to your record. They go buy the album. They become fans. And if you don't have a hit and it's a great album that's on Spotify or that's on iTunes, but you're not really getting any traction, it's hard to get people's attention. So, like, people, even in the States, we haven't had a hit in a long time, and people say, like, oh my God, where have you guys been? You haven't been, like, have been around for, like, 8 years.
You haven't had that mainstream presence.
And I'm like, we've been playing. We did a U.S. tour. We did, like, you just don't know about it because we didn't have a hit, and people aren't talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
So we're always mindful to try to write songs that, as much as we like them, to be like, oh, this could be on radio. And we don't get played on rock radio. We get played on pop radio.
Sure.
So it's got to be somewhat pop, you know? And I like pop music. I love it. So yeah,
that's fantastic.
You know?
I guess I just want to talk to you about, like, real quickly about how, you know, what are you, like, you're in your mid-30s now?
Yeah, 36.
You're 36. And, I mean, I'm 34. Had to check. 34. Yeah. You know, isn't it weird how sometimes you forget? Somebody asked, I went to a casino the other day, and you know, they like asked, they didn't ask for ID. They asked how old I was.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I'm 33. I think I might have said 32.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend goes, no, you're not. I don't fucking remember. What's wrong with me, dude?
Yeah. It's with age. We're getting old.
But yeah, I mean, you get older, and you know, you mentioned how, okay, yeah, like, I'm writing songs, and songwriting's hard for me, and I don't come home from a fucking 3-month tour and pick up the guitar.
Yeah.
I go golfing, and I go surfing, and I have a barbecue, and I'm worried about landscaping, and I got bills to pay, and I got this, and I got my kids. How is music in your life now? Do you still feel passionate about music?
I definitely do feel passionate about music. I feel like the band is, you know, inevitably becomes like a job, right?
Yep.
And a lot of times, I'll be honest with you, I really don't feel like going to work. I don't feel like going on tour. I don't feel like trying to write a song. But whenever I do it, and whenever if I'm like, hey, I don't want to write a song, but man, this record needs to be done, I'm going to go up to LA and spend the week there with Chuck, and we're going to bang our heads on the wall for 5 days and try to write a good song. I really don't feel like doing it. But after 5 days or after 2 days, if we have a breakthrough idea that's amazing, it gives me a sense of joy and excitement that is the reason why I keep doing it. And it's not for the money, because I don't know if the song's going to be a hit. But when I have a song that I've written that I'm like, wow, this is really good, and I think, and I'll never know, but I think I would be a fan of this if I heard it.
Yeah.
And I like, I mean, I play my music all the time. It's really lame, but like, when I
listen to your own band.
Oh, when I have a demo, not the records, but when I have a demo that I just did, because I produce it myself.
Yeah.
I listen to it like 100 times, and I'm like nonstop. And I'm like, this is amazing. I love it. I love it. And that's a great feeling, you know? And, you know, if we have a tour lined up, like, a few weeks ago before we left for the tour, I'd been home for a long time. I've been, you know, making a record in Southern California near my house. And I've been writing at my house, so I'm with my girls. And the tour's about to start. We're in the road, and I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to. Like, I got to start warming up my voice. Got to start doing stuff.
Right.
And then I play a show. And even if I'm, like, right before the stage, like, oh, I don't feel like it. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Get up on stage, play a couple songs, get down in the pit, get down in the crowd, grab their hands, see them singing back, and like seeing the emotion on their faces, on my own face, it's awesome.
You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm sucked right in. Yeah.
Even though your voice might hurt the next day.
Yeah.
Are you, is that trouble right now after this short little trip and
today
I'm a little bit at the after party and
yeah,
all that?
I'm a little bit hoarse today, but I realize that I think, and talk to me again in 6 months, but I've really worked on my warm up and warm downs, and it makes a huge difference. Right now I sound like crap, but I can warm up into a good singing voice if I do it right. I've taken a lot of vocal lessons from different people, and I've sort of picked and choose the stuff I like the most from everybody. And I find that I used to wake up on tour and sound like this, like kind of hoarse and like, what's going on? And be like, oh boy, won't be able to sing tonight. So what would I do? I would stop talking.
Yeah.
I'd be quiet and I'd wait for sound check and I would power through sound check and I'd be quiet.
Yeah.
And then I'd get on stage like, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's go. Let's sing. And I've realized that now it's the stupidest thing ever. I need to warm up. I need to like, I can wake up now in the morning and I do, and I'm like, whoa, my voice is pretty banged up. And I just start humming all day and I just do the lip trills and whatever all day. And I loosen it up and I stretch it out. And then by the set time, it's good.
Even just talking for me does it. Like I wake up.
Talking for me actually hurts me.
Oh, it does hurt you?
Yeah. Like that, I was way better before this interview than I am now.
Yeah, you sound a little raspy. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's
fine. Only one more. No. Chicago might get a rough one.
It's totally fine. No. But talking is the worst for me.
Yeah.
I think I speak from the wrong place.
Maybe.
Yeah. But it's, you know.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but anything else you want to add or talk about? I mean, maybe the new record, when's it coming?
It's still kind of up in the air. We're looking at possible October release or maybe January. I think first single coming out in September.
Good.
We've got the new song Boom that we've been playing live that's going to come out in the next couple of weeks. That's not a radio single. It's going to be a song that we want to put out for the fans. And then possibly another fan song and then first single in September. Then a new record and then more touring and more madness.
Awesome.
Crazy.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am. I think so. I think it's going to be
bring
tough.
Your kids on the road?
The kids were with me last week in Ottawa and in Sherbrooke for some other shows, and they will be coming with me in Europe in August. And they love it. They just love the tours.
Are you stoked that your band doesn't swear so that your kids can learn your songs and not you don't have to worry about it?
Totally. We do a couple of swear words here and there on the new album, and whenever I sing them in the car because they love my new song, they want to hear Daddy's song.
Yeah.
I just like bleep it. Yeah, I bleep it when the word comes around.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wonder about that. I always wonder, like, about bands or the, you know, what does Zach De La Rocha's kids think about, you know, fuck you, I won't do what you tell
me. Oh, yeah,
me.
Right.
Things like that,
but
right?
Even, like, when we listen to the radio in the car and, like, even my wife, my kids are very young. They're 3.5 and 2. So even shut up is kind of a bad word.
Ah, yes.
I mean, like, you don't really say that. I don't say, they don't even know what shut up means. They don't know that it means shut your mouth. It just sounds aggressive to them. So whenever the song comes on, I'm like, shut up and dance. My wife just goes up, and dance with me.
Hardcore
get up
parents.
And dance with me. You know, it's pretty funny. So, but you know, it is what it is. They're going to learn all the bad words and
they will.
They're going to be horrible. They're going to party. And but we're going to be loving parents.
They might even form bands and go on the road at 17, and you're going to have to buy them an RV to drive across the country.
That's unacceptable. Unacceptable. I will not. Actually, I'm okay with that. We'll see. I'll probably go on tour with them, you know.
You probably will.
I'll be the sound guy.
Beautiful. Well, hey, Pierre, it's been real.
Of
course. Really great seeing you, and
thank you,
thanks for chatting with me.
It's a pleasure.
Peace out.
Thank you.
So there it is, my conversation with Mr. Pierre Bouvier. We got into some deep stuff there, and I love the story about how their bass player, David, replaced Pierre, then ended up in the same band with him. So, so bizarre. Next week, it will be 2016. Can you believe it? Man, 2015 just flew by. We will be back with an all-new episode, another doozy, as I like to say. Please, if you guys have some extra time over the holidays, please go back and check out the first 6 episodes we've done. I think they really got something for everybody. And also, if you like the podcast, it really, really helps out the show if you can go to iTunes and write a review. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Just 5 stars would be nice. And that really, really helps us with the rankings and having new people find out about the show. Also, suggestions for the show, feedback, or if you just want to say hi, feel free to email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. That is it. Thanks again. Happy New Year to everybody. I'm going to leave you with a song that Pierre and I were talking about in the podcast. This is the song Friend by Reset from the album No Limits. And this is actually kind of a diss track about Chuck, but it's okay now. We can play it now because they've made up and they've had an amazing career together. Feel free to check out all the other Reset too. This is kind of a poppy jam. A lot of the Reset stuff is a lot faster, but you'll hear at the very end of this song, it kind of gets fast, and that's sort of what Reset sounds like, generally speaking. But this is a great song regardless. This is Friend by Reset on Lead Singer Syndrome. Please have a happy and safe new year. We'll see you next year.
Started off a little while ago. We built this little boat and set it off to sea. Then we brought